heavenly mother crying. These children are dying at the hand of the other child. I know her heart is breaking. I feel the earth is shaking. That rivers flow from the tears she cries. She cries, she cries. Rachel's weeping for her children.
Rachel's weeping.
For how someone got to save them.
Save her children.
And if you say that love the answer, why don't we begin? Or will we just end?
Good evening and welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. And Happy New Year. This is the first time that we've had an opportunity to speak with you and to speak our hearts with you during the brand new year of 2011. There's a gospel song that I enjoy that says, "Never would have made it without you." And I know that many of those of us who are listening, those of us who are speaking, and many of those who will probably be listening to the recording of this, know that there were some many hard times, some difficult times, and even though there were lots of high moments during the course of the year, that we were glad to be able to see another day, another year. We have a wonderful lineup of guests for this year, for Heart Talk with Miss E. And as you know, that the primary focus of our program is to address issues related to youth in the foster care system, those who have been separated from their biological parents, and those who may have either been adopted or living in group home, foster care, relative care, or any placement that has been a separation from their biological parents. And we know that children are separated for many, many reasons. So the guests that we have had on up to this point and from here on out will primarily be young adults who managed to make it through the system and to speak directly from their heart. We hear a lot of professionals talk about, you know, what are some of the dynamics of children who have the trauma of separation from birth families, children who've gone through the stress of violence or abuse or any number of things. But my take is that that is most of the time head knowledge and observation. My goal is to speak to those who have a knowing from the core of their hearts, those who can speak directly from their hearts and to share with you what has worked and what has not worked. Our guest for this evening, who has not yet arrived, is a gentleman that I met probably maybe a little over 6 months ago, an awesome young man, and his name is Alfonso Tucker. And if you had the opportunity to read the introduction or the synopsis of tonight's phone call, you will know that Alfonso did not have the best beginnings. And according to the statistics, when you look at his ethnicity, his gender, his biological threat, his environment, everything, all of the odds were against him. However, when you have an opportunity to listen to him, you will learn that there is no excuse for anything. And what Mr. Tucker decided that he wanted to speak about this evening was evoking positive energy on the journey to success. A lot of times we feel like our energy is drained. A lot of times we feel that there's so many negative things coming against us that we don't have the energy to move on. But Alfonso wanted to speak to us about what happens when we manage to tap into that one small flame of positive energy and how it happens when somebody just slips a little bit of positive energy into our lives. And that is my message to, as I say, to do things with heart, that there are a lot of things that our young people are going through, and we never know when just a little warmth, a little caring that can ignite that flame, ignite that energy inside of a young person that gives them the heart and the mindset, you know, maybe I can live my dream. Maybe I can finish school. Maybe I can have a productive life. Maybe I can have a family of my own. Maybe I won't have to go back and do some of the same things that I've observed my village, that my not-so-positive village do, as well as my biological parents. And that is my whole intent. And my mission of For a Child's Heart is to ignite the fire, to ignite the energy into a child's heart. We have so many, 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 many gifted young people who, first of all, aren't even aware of it themselves. Others may have a sense of awareness, but there's no one to validate or to reinforce that gift and that flame inside of them. So what do you expect, you know? There's an old song by Billy Preston that says, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So it doesn't take a mathematician or, as they said, as a brain scientist to figure that out. We've got to give them something to hold on to. And fortunately, Alfonso received that. And I am so proud of him. I had the opportunity to interview him for our television program, Visions for a Child's Heart, probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And it's just an awesome interview. And actually, it was so good, I actually had him to do another one with just him and another one of our guests who happened to be in the studio on that day. One of the things that I admire about Alfonso is that he has a very soothing, mellow, smooth energy about him when he speaks. And just to listen to him, he's intense, but mellow, and you would never think that he had been through some of the things that he writes of and speaks of in his book. And I just can't help but to say is that when we look at a child and we say, there's no hope, never say this, never say that, because he is a living witness. And most of the young people that I come into contact with throughout the course of my work, I find that there are so many nuggets and gems that just need to be polished, that just need to be nurtured, that just need to be called forth into, as my mentor Les Brown says, into their greatness. So Mr. Alfonso is still not on. However, one of the things that is happening in his life now, he is employed by a Northern California law enforcement agency. And he did say when we were scheduling this interview that even though he's working day shifts, sometimes his schedule might go over, and but that he would inform me if that was the case. But that's about life, when you learn that you have to be ready for whatever life brings you, just as I need to be ready for what this hour is bringing me if I am the only one speaking. And the reason that I have the young people to come forth and to speak is because I feel that they can't tell it like I can. I see it, I observe it, I experience it, I feel it, and there's just nothing like being there. I share a lot of stories with people, but it's not until they see the faces, until they hear the words and feel the energy that comes forth from the young people themselves, do they really get what I am talking about. And I figured, I can show you better than I can tell you. However, that is my goal, is to be able to share in whatever capacity I can what the beginnings, the middles, and the outcomes can be for our young people who have been marginalized. And we as a society, we as a village, have to make the difference. If you're someone that participates in a lot of motivational calls or read the newspapers or listen to popular talk shows, I'm sure that no one has gotten through this past week or two without hearing the story of Mr. Ted Williams, a gentleman who made some choices in his life, had a gift inside. Someone called out that gift, and he even acted upon it, but he went back inside a very, very dark place and did not capitalize on that gift and let it go down the drain. And that bothers me because I see so many, 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 many of our young people who have similarities. And when they get the gift called out, for whatever reason, they go back. And as a therapist, I feel so strongly, everyone says, well, does, you know, not everyone needs therapy. And I said, no, I don't believe everyone needs therapy, but I sure believe that everyone can benefit from therapy because we all have certain places inside of us that regardless of what gifts we have, regardless of what talents we have, regardless of what knowledge or education, what beauty we might have, there are some dark places inside of each of us that have some dampness that brings forth a draft that cools that flame, that cools that energy that we have inside of us to be able to move forth. And when that part of us freezes up, we try to medicate it. We try to do things to make it not seem so obvious. And that's why people go to doing things that gives them short-term high, you know, to get that immediate gratification because they can't see beyond the moment. And all we know in our society, as they say, we are a feel-good society. We want to feel good right now. So why do people use drugs or any other things to numb and or drown out those voices that tell us that we are no one, that there's nothing that's going to be different in our lives than anybody else has come along? You're not special. Who do you think you are? No, 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 no. That is not the way that we can move forth in the gift of who we are. So when that happens, somebody's got to come along and say, no, 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 baby, look at this. Look at what you've done. And sometimes, as they say, there's a scripture in the Bible says, as David says, sometimes you have to encourage yourself. And I hear that a lot of time, and I joke, but I found myself yesterday driving down the street, and I've had, you know, a very major loss in my life this week. And even though this person brought a lot of joy in my life, I was able to look at the moment and have some laughter as I talked about him, but at the same time, there was a sadness. But I'd had a couple of days to have the sadness, so I was driving down the street, and I just felt the tears rolling in. You know, I've got to go in and help people. And I found myself saying to myself, or as I would say to my inner child, stop it. We've got to go to work. And I told someone today, you know, I felt a little off because that little child in my inside of me started to feel a little sad. It's like, oh, she told me to stop. You know, she's not allowing me to have my feelings and have my pity party. But the reality was that I allowed myself, but sometimes there are things that we have to do to move on. So I had to encourage myself and say, okay, you'll have some time, but right now, what is it that he would want you to do? He would want you to go forth and continue to give the love and the inspiration and the encouragement and the motivation to the people that have been assigned in your life. So sometimes when we don't have anyone else, but at the same time, we have to know how to go about doing that. We have to know how to go about, and what other way do we learn? We usually learn from the people who have been the caregivers in our lives. We learn from the role models in our communities. Unfortunately, we learn a lot from television and movies, and a lot of those have not been very good examples. So it's important. I have one of my young men, Jaquin, and he might be on the call, but what I love about this young man, he reads any and everything that he feels is going to get his mind in a set to make changes. I know that there are certain areas in his life he wants to be better. You know, he knows that some things he's great in, other things he wants to be better. And what better way? To pull in the knowledge. Did he have someone consistent in his life that gives him that? No, but he's giving it to himself, and I love it. So as we do that for one another, we need to do that for ourselves. Give our young people a chance. Give them a chance. And you might say, well, nobody gave me a chance. Did you give yourself a chance? What chances are you giving to yourself this very day? What are you doing to make your energy, to bring your energy up, to find the energy that you tap into that takes you closer to your goals and to your visions. For me, it's doing exactly what I'm doing right now. Not quite, because I would like for somebody to be on the other end. But I enjoy talking. I love hearing testimonies of victory and overcoming obstacles. I love encouraging people, especially young people, to convince them that, yes, you can do this. You can go beyond all of this, what seems like it's coming from nothing. That's what I enjoy. So when I'm down, sometimes it may take me a little bit more minutes, time, a little bit more energy to get forth and go on. But once I'm in it, I feel the energy that just flows through me. And that's when I know I am living on purpose. So what is it that sparks your energy? What is it that gets you going and moving in order to be able to have a successful journey? And when we talk about success, that is defined only by yourself. So at this time, I wanted to read something from Mr. Tucker's book, and it's entitled Noesis, which means comprehension and understanding, and it's the autobiographical, it's a life story, of a young man that's destined to survive and succeed as he shares his journey. And as you may have read, that Alfonso was born to a young woman who herself was a prostitute, and his father, her pimp, took him away from her when he was less than 6 months of age. And in living with him, he experienced the exposure to so many things in life because his father's lifestyle was that of a cocaine addict, a heroin addict, a dealer, just all of the things that we envision as being most negative in our environment. But let's take a break for the moment, and I'm going to give you a little musical interlude to listen to more of our theme song, which is a song that we also use for our television program, written by a very talented gentleman who lives in Vallejo, California, by the name of Mr. Damon Williams. And the title of this song is called Rachel's Weeping. And it talks about weeping for the trials and the tribulations of our children who are not only just in our communities but all over the world. And he has a very personal story behind this song. But for just a few minutes, I'd like for you to listen to the words of this song, and I'll be right back. Thank you.
Thank you.
over Challenge Bay. Another week hers are the living day. A mother cries, a child goes hungry someday. What of the child will be better off better dead? See Rachel the weeping. Evolution is spark, broke America's heart. Now everyone that says evil look like me, it's me. The prison knows no color, I'm hard to know my brother. It's a soul I have no eye to see. Rachel's weeping for her children.
That was Mr. Damon Williams singing Rachel's Weeping for Her Children. And if anyone who has a heart, one of my favorite songs by Dionne Warwick and Mr. Luther Vandross, if anyone has a heart, we can't help but to weep for our children. But there's a time where we have to stop weeping and get up and do something about it. So at this point, I believe we do have Mr. Tucker on the line. Alfonso, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, welcome. I was getting a little worried.
Hey. Yeah, man, I was trying to get home. I was trying to get to the phone. You don't even understand. I'm probably, you know, speeding a little bit, but you know, I'm all safe and sound and I'm glad I made it. Gosh, I'm so glad I made it. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. My energy was shifting a little bit. I was sweating a little bit, had to find my energy to move up, but everything happens for a reason. So welcome, and we've got 35 minutes to squeeze in everything I wanted to say, but I did explain to the audience that you had told me before that by the nature of your work in law enforcement that there
right.
might be a possibility that you wouldn't be able to get here, but knowing you, I was expecting I would have had a text or a call or something, but
trying like you don't even understand. I was hoping to get here just a little bit faster so I wouldn't have to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
But my gosh, hey. But I'm going to give you all I got. I'm going to give you all I can. And mind you, now and in the future. So please understand that I understand your plight and I'm all for it. And I really appreciate you having me on your show.
We're glad to have you. I was sharing with the audience, you know, that with this being the beginning of the new year, and as you and I were talking about what to entitle this program, that you really
right.
had a certain passion for evoking positive energy. And I added
Definitely.
On the journey to success, because you are a young man who started off, as I stated to the audience, who, according to statistics, all of the odds were against you by gender,
right.
by ethnicity, by biological strain, by environment, everything. However,
right.
you found your way. You found the energy and tapped into it on your journey to success. So tell
right.
our audience just a little bit about what you're doing now, and let's go back and talk about what that energy was and how you were able to shift that.
Okay. You know, the energy definitely came from a positive place, so to speak. Anytime one dwells within negativity, you know, it halts and limits their growth. So I've been very, very fortunate to remain optimistic. If anyone, you know, listening remembers this word, optimistic, you have to remain so. You have to remain so. And throughout my life, I've been hit with so many issues that if I didn't remain optimistic, then, you know, I would definitely be in that line of the statistics that you were talking about earlier. But to answer your question, my plight, Noesis 3, that's the name of my business. And for those of you who may not have heard the word Noesis, it means comprehension and understanding, the power of thought. And I can remember, you know, not too long ago speaking with a friend of mine and telling them about Noesis and coming to the realization that it's not just the power of thought, but it's the power of applied thought. So anytime you wake up and you have that energy within you and you want to accomplish certain goals, apply it. You know, as human beings, we have been given gifts. You know, we can think about things, and those things that we think about can come to fruition. So anytime one is feeling as if, you know, the world is against them and things are not going so well, you know, I've been in those situations. For example, living with my biological father, not knowing, you know, where my next meal was coming from at a certain point in my life, but then years and years before that, you know, living, you know, vastly, so to speak, with just, you know, bountiful of food and clothing or whatnot when he, you know, was living a certain lifestyle. But when he became a drug addict and the women that he was selling, and I don't want to turn some of your listeners off, but I'm going to be, you know, completely frank here. He was living, you know, that life of a person that we would, you know, by common terms understand as a pimp. Him pimping these women, you know, they took care of me, and at, you know, a certain point in his life, he credited losing his heroin addiction and gaining another addiction, which was crack cocaine. And a lot of those, you know, late 70s, 80s, you know, early 90s people that were out and about hanging out during those times, they definitely know what crack is all about. And unfortunately, those times, you know, hit home pretty hard, and I lived right in the middle of it. You know, I lived in crack house, and you know, the women who were running in and out of my home, who I thought were so pretty at one point, you know, their bodies became really frail and weak because of their drug addiction. And making that statement, it leads me back to what we were discussing in regards to remaining optimistic. You know, those times it was just completely horrible because I didn't know where my next step was going to be. I didn't know how I was going to accomplish, you know, these goals of actually wanting to be someone other than a drug dealer, other than a person that was going to, you know, look forward to, you know, a jail cell every other night, if you will. It's just, you got to remain optimistic, and you can't give up.
My question,
you can't ever
first
give
of all,
up.
Is where were you even able to grab a vision of something different than what you were living in? Because my experience is that when our children are not exposed to something different, they, you know, aspire to be what they see. How did you even come up with a vision different than what you were exposed to?
Well, a couple different reasons. You know this, but your listeners may not know this. I've never met my biological mother. And for the longest, I've always wanted to share a relationship with, you know, a woman that I would look up to and consider a mother figure. So as I've gone through life, so to speak, when I was 13, the court system, I became a ward of the court. I was taken away from my biological father, and I was put into foster care. And while going through foster care, I was fortunate enough to communicate with a woman by the name of Linda Reeves, and she became my first mother figure, an amazing woman, a black woman
age
who
of
taught
13.
Me how to use a knife and fork. Say it again.
I said at the age of 13.
Yeah, at the age of 13, you know, and that was pretty critical for me because, you know, I was still developing into a young man, and to be completely honest with you, how I handled the bulk of my issues, so to speak, is, you know, via rage. I'd clench up my fist and, you know, I'd stand my ground and fight, so to speak, and, you know, that was every day, but a lot of times coming from places that a lot of persons like myself come from, I mean, that's common, and you have to fight or, you know, you'll be taken advantage of. But, hey, you know, I went into foster care, and even though I can say that Linda Rees actually showed me something that I never thought I'd see, which was, you know, a positive black woman who had her stuff together, so to speak. At the time, she was a teacher. She later, you know, opened several group homes, and, you know, I couldn't stay with her because I was considered a welfare case 300, and then, you know, later, excuse me, I couldn't live with 601, 602s. These were, you know, codes for the type of children that were in and out of the system via the welfare system or the juvenile criminal system. So I couldn't stay with her.
Let me just intervene here and say, for those who don't know, a 300 is a child that's under the code. Basically, it states that a child is a dependent of the court because of something that their parents did. They were unprotected. A 600 or 601 is a child who comes to the probation department, to the juvenile criminal department for offenses that they've committed. And the key has been, or the point has been throughout the year, to not place them together. However, we have another issue with the system as we speak, but I just wanted to state that.
Oh, you're correct. You're correct in all accounts. But that woman, she shined some light on me, so to speak, and she opened my eyes to, you know, a lifestyle that at the time I completely thought was bougie and I didn't think was normal. But I only lived with her for a year, and then I lived in another foster home, and that one was, you know, like night and day. It was completely different, and I just in no way, shape, or form thought that I was, you know, going to get out of that situation sane, because it was just horrible. You know, you come home, and even though it wasn't like living with my biological father where, you know, cats were kicking in the door and, you know, we were doing some pretty heinous things, hurting people just to remain safe ourselves. But anyway, that journey led me to my last foster care placement with, you know, my now parents, whom I love dearly, and I refer to them as mother and father and introduce them as such. And, gosh, you know, Mike and Dana Darling are a blessing to me. You know, they are my family, and I went to live with them when I was 17. And oddly enough, I was given the opportunity, you know, to kind of start life over again, you know, in a situation where I can look forward to, you know, opportunities. And if I remained positive, I would get those opportunities. And when you talk about the power of thought, it's just completely amazing, because thinking that I wanted to be in a situation where I can pursue a higher education, I can pursue, you know, a life where I can live and take care of myself, which, you know, a lot of people view as common. Well, coming from my childhood, that definitely wasn't common. So, you know, I put myself in a situation where, gosh, I learned how to study in college, and I didn't even think I was going to graduate from high school. Just amazing. Just amazing.
Well,
you know,
I'm sure many others who knew you didn't expect you to either.
You know, I'm sure that people who knew me when I was younger probably thought that I oddly enough, was behind in school. You know, I flunked the second grade because of, you know, the situations that were going on in my house. But those people probably thought that I was going to be robbing them when I got older, or, you know, I was going to be involved in a lot of criminal activity just because, you know, that's what I was taught. You know, I wasn't taught how to communicate like, you know, I am with you now. You know, I was not taught to look a person in the eye, to shake their hand, and to stand strong with my posture erect, and speak openly and freely about my thoughts. I wasn't taught that way. I was taught, you know, you scamming, you making sure that your next meal is coming from, you know, a place that is going to be regular, so to speak, meaning, you know, I was probably going to be going in your pockets when your back was turned, or I was going to be sneaking through your window, you know, stealing your at then color TV, or, you know, I was going to hit you over the head, you know, like my father taught me, you know, put a gun to this man's throat, and while he's shaking, you know, once he calms down a little bit, tell him to give you his money, and then you be out. You know, I mean, it's crazy things, but
right.
And I was very fortunate.
That gets to me, and for our listeners, if you wish to see the full video interview that I did with Alfonso, you can go to our website at www.forachildsheart.org and go to TV show. And you can go there and scroll until you find the interview. But one of the things that I asked you during that time was, or one of the comments that I made, is that when caregivers, whether it's foster parents, community members, or whatever, come across a child as yourself who has been taught this is the value system that you've been taught, it's not your fault. But they say, oh, there are those little bad kids. You know,
right.
and they said that, you know, they doom you, and it's not your fault. If that's all you've been taught. But two things that I want to come out of tonight, and then there's a third question because I'm just always impressed by you with. One is for caregivers is that how do you embrace the child who has been taught that they got to, you know, basically, literally and figuratively kill for what they want? Secondly, And how to show that love when you don't know how to show it back. That's number one.
Right.
Number two is to a young person who feels that that's all there is, how would one convince them, what would you say to them about giving another way of doing things a chance? So I know that's a mouthful, but I'm trying to pull it all out while my brain is straight. The other thing is your energy, when you talk about energy, the positive energy, you have such a mellow energy about you. When you talk, you have an intensity. You look in your eyes, it's intense, but there is just this real, just, I can't even describe it. Tell me a little bit about all those things, and I've got to be quiet
okay.
and listen.
Okay. I'll backtrack the first unconditional love and then showing love and then convincing, you know, how to convince, you know, a person to show that love by giving, you know, a person in my position a chance. And then you asked me about my calm nature, if you will, with such an intense energy that I do possess. You know, what I learned from my biological father, and one thing that I do give him credit for, is that he taught me to remain calm in all situations. Oddly enough, I grew up with that mentality, so to speak. So, oddly enough, when someone kicked in my door, you know, I wasn't so frightened that I could not react, or I was not so beside myself that I could not think, simply because my biological father told me, you know, you don't want to be the loudest person on the block when you're involved in the situation, and you don't want to be so boisterous that you draw so much attention to yourself that you either don't have an alibi or you can't get out of the situation. And you want to be able to think clearly in all situations so as to be able to make the best decision possible. Oddly enough, all that great advice was geared towards something negative as coming up, robbing, stealing, and killing.
Mm.
You know? Now, a lot of people don't realize that, because they think within these situations that are so heinous, you know, it's so violent that it's loud, it's rageful, and it's very, very bad, so to speak, which doesn't necessarily consist with one being calm. But oddly enough, that man taught me that, and as I got older, it became a part of my personality, along with everything else that he taught me that was bad. However, when I grew up, so to speak, and I started having some adult thoughts outside of me being a man within a child's body surviving at a young age, I was able to actually understand not just right from wrong, but where I wanted to take my life. And that leads me into, you know, your first question. My, you know, my energy, I have been described as you know, intense, yet calm. Oddly enough, there are pros and cons to that. You know, I'm either extremely happy, so to speak, within having conversation and trying to accomplish these goals, or I'm completely serious. You know, and the odd thing about it is for me, there really isn't you know, a middle ground. You know, yet it has taught me some things. You know, the positive aspect of accomplishing the goals that I'm trying to accomplish within communicating with people. I think they see and they hear and they feel that intensity. Yet the calm nature doesn't put them at odds with me, so to speak. So I'm able to actually give them information and explain some seriously heinous situations, but in a fashion where they can understand it. You know?
Yeah.
Very, very, very positive for me, which is a reflection of my personality, which I'm very, very grateful for. However, it has its pros and cons. For example, the unconditional love that I think every person in my position and every person in a position that is there to help a person like myself, hence Linda Reeves, my parents, Mike and Dana Darling, the judge that handled the case when I was given legal custody to Mike and Dana Darling, Nancy Cisneros. There's an unconditional love that they gave me. And that is number one for that very first question that you asked me. Yet my energy, I didn't know how to accept it, even though I would approach them, you know, with a calm tone, so to speak, understanding, you know, where I want to be and thinking, how do I accomplish these goals? How do I put myself in a position where I can prosper in life? How? Gosh, they offered me unconditional love. And the odd thing about it is persons in my position will assume either that it is a sign of weakness. Why are these persons trying to coerce me into being weak? Why would they even want me to smile? Why would they even want me to speak calmly, so to speak? Why would they not want me to become crazy, excited, and boisterous when I'm involved in a situation? Because, you know, basically, that's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
That unconditional love is amazing. And truthfully, there's a lot of thought, you know, involved, and it takes nothing more than some pleasant conversation and that gift of saying, you know what, no matter what you do, I'm going to be here for you as long as you want me to be here for you. That is that unconditional love that will allow, you know, a person to get over that hump, that allowed me to get over the hump. You know, I didn't for a million years, and I still have conversations with Linda Reeves. I'll be headed home, you know, this weekend to Fresno, where I grew up, and I'll take her either to lunch or to dinner, and I'll speak with Nancy Cisneros, the judge, and I'll either take her to lunch or dinner, and then I'll stay at my parents' house. And that love is still there. It's still very strong, and even though it's a two-way street, I have to give it myself. Back in the day, I didn't know why these people were loving me, and I thought, you know, they must want something that I don't have right now, because, you know, they're telling me that, you know, they care for me, they want to do this for me, and I mean, that's a sucker's game. I'm gonna try to get over. I'm gonna get whatever I can, you know. And oddly enough, it was real. So,
and you know,
to those listeners who are really, really being tested, so to speak, it's natural. Those kids, they are only testing you so as to prove to themselves that it is real and that it is reality. Because if you fail them by saying, you know what, you are so bad, you're so boisterous, so belligerent, you're so out of control, I can't handle you, you must go away, then all they will say to themselves is, it's just another person that doesn't want me. This world is so bad. I don't need to be here. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you let them know that they can, and the only way that can truly, in my opinion, be done is that unconditional love, showing them every day that they are actually someone special, convincing them that they do have all the chances and opportunities in life that they can reach out and grab. It is theirs, and they just have to keep fighting for it and fighting for it in a positive fashion.
Yes, and I know that that is so important, and it's so much easier said than done. And
yeah.
I have a foster adopt parent now, and I hope they're listening to this call, because something similar is going. And as my book states, it's hard work. It's hard. It has to come from the heart. But you said something I felt that was very interesting. You stated that to let them know, as long as they wanted you to be there, because the question that I get answered a lot of times is, where do you draw the line? Because there, you know, you can give and give and give, and you know you get drained, especially if you're not bringing something back in. And that's why I tell foster and adoptive parents, it's extremely important that, one, you know the reason and you're clear about why you're going in to do this work, because it can suck everything out of you if you're not hooked up to the true source of, you know, your being involved.
Right.
So what would you say would be the line of, for someone to say, okay, this is enough? And maybe any examples of what you went through with Linda where she could have given up, but she didn't. Do you have any specific
scenarios
that you recall?
Definitely. For example, the line is drawn under these conditions. When you accept, say, a person like myself into your home and you're raising them, be them a child under the age of 13, a child going into foster care, I was 13, you know, I was already a young man. And then my last foster care placement, I was 17. I mean, I was definitely a man, you know, by my thoughts. That line has to be drawn when, you know, your own safety, the safety of your family is threatened. Now, unfortunately, there are going to be some of us who take this kindness for weakness and take full advantage of it from a negative standpoint. Now, if yourself, your family, is threatened, then unfortunately that particular child may need a different type of guidance. And that might not be the type of guidance that you can give. That might be some serious psychotherapy in a situations where it's given on a regular basis for a lengthy amount of time, and you might not be able to provide that, you know, or your family or, you know, the organization that you're with. Then that means you have to direct that child into a different path, that person into a different path where they can seek that type of help. However, if those lines aren't drawn, then it takes a great deal of restraint just to deal with everyday issues, because you're dealing with someone new in your home. Personalities clash. I, for one, just thought that because I was able to survive, you know, from a street standpoint, to be quite frank, I knew everything. And when I went into, you know, my last foster care placement, oddly enough, you know, I'm an African-American male, and I was placed with a Caucasian family, and that was a whole different world, completely different world. I can remember mowing my neighbor's lawn for some extra money that my foster father set a little job up for me to make some extra cash. And I'm mowing the lawn, and the neighbor comes from across the street, older white male, and asks me, sir, with all due respect, and mind you, I'm 17, and he's calling me sir because he doesn't know how to address me. He says, you know, I grew up referring to persons of your like in nature as colored or Negro, I don't know how to address you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. I was just taken aback because here I am thinking this white man is calling me a colored boy or he's calling me a Negro, but it wasn't offensive. I had to educate him. He wasn't trying to disrespect me. He just didn't know because he hadn't had many conversations with persons of color. Amazing. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how that ties into that line is if by chance that situation were any different and the child, say, did not handle a situation similar to that, because a lot of persons are offended by certain things,
mm-hmm.
and it became a violent situation, then of course, if your family is threatened, if you are threatened, then no, you're not going to be able to do that yourself. You're probably going to need some outside assistance. But if you're able to have conversation with persons like that and educate them or the child and teach them that, hey, every situation does not have to be handled with you clenching your fist.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're going to be able to do great things. And the growth you will see in that child, a person like myself, will be completely amazing. Completely amazing. So
yeah.
In regards to answering your question, that is where the line would be drawn.
With physical danger. And a
yeah,
lot
definitely.
Of caregivers have an issue, you know, with just the attitude and what some of us have experienced as emotional abuse because of the way that, you know, people can shut us out, shut us down, or totally ignore us. And
right.
The other part of that is you have made reference a few times to people taking your kindness for weakness. And I think a lot of
right.
adults feel that, you know, well, that's the only way they know how to deal with them, because otherwise, you know, they think you're weak. They think you're stupid. And that's why I always
right.
talk about coming from the heart, because kids
right.
need to observe our energies. When we come to them, it needs to be from a place other than anger, because underneath our anger
right.
is hurt, disappointment, frustration, fear. And a lot of times as caregivers, we're afraid to show that side of ourselves. And our energy is also a part of what the young people pick up on.
Of course. Of course, you hit it on the nose, that energy within yourself and how, you know, you exude that, that the child himself or herself is going to pick up on that, and how do they address it then? You know, the odd thing about all of this is we're human beings, and the nature of a human being is social. So most of the time, if you are giving and you are social and you are communicating, then that's going to open up some doors. That's going to allow a person to communicate. That's going to allow a person to relinquish themselves, so to speak, if I can say that. And the reason why I say that is because most of us who come from a situation similar to mine don't want to relinquish ourselves. We want to remain in that. In that box, we want to have that shield up. We want to have that guard up because we are protecting ourselves. And a lot of times we need to be told that this particular shield can be used in other areas. You can open your heart. You can express your feelings. You can talk. You can communicate. And it allows you to grow. A lot of us don't realize that. And it's simply stated, but, you know, the very first conversation that I recall that was so heartfelt, that was a sense of a weight being lifted from my shoulders, was the first time I had a conversation with a counselor, and it was because Nancy Cisneros, the judge who handled the case when I was given legal custody to my last foster parents, made it mandatory that I seek counseling. And oddly enough, I sat in that counselor's office. His name was Dave Hill, I remember distinctly, and I was afraid to communicate with him because any time a person in my situation shared their feelings, it was a sign of weakness, and I could not relinquish that because then I would be weak.
Wow.
But when I found out that it was okay to actually talk and to communicate, man, I became stronger, and that light is still shining today.
Yes. And how did you get across that threshold? Because as a therapist, usually I don't have much of a problem getting a kid to talk, but I hear a lot of adults say, they just won't talk, they just won't talk. And
right.
So I know what usually happens with me, but from your perspective, do you remember when you crossed that line and allowed yourself to be vulnerable in that session with Dave?
Yeah, see, when I was sure that it did not weaken me, so to speak. Now, that word is so very powerful because one, in my position, a child, needs to know that it does not weaken you. You know, you remember that shield I was talking about and the barrier?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are traits that we've grown up and we've cultivated, so to speak, just for self-preservation.
Yes.
Amazing, amazing. If you just, within conversation, let them know that you can still prosper in life, you can still grow, you can still accomplish these goals, this does not weaken you. Communication does not weaken you. In fact, it makes you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so soon as I realized that within that conversation with Dave Hill, I remember distinctly it opened me up, and you know, it allowed my thoughts to become a bit more clear, and then from then on, you know, I started to understand, you know, a lot more of myself and why, you know, why I wanted to become the man I like to think that I am today.
Awesome. And today, being someone that works in law enforcement, you talked about all of those gifts that you had and that were used for ill gain. You're now using them for protection and the things of taking care of our society.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With my writing, with my books, with my speaking, oddly enough, I developed some codependency living with my biological father, going through a lot of the situations that I went through when I was younger. And fortunately enough, I found an outlet to channel that codependency in a positive area. You know, I for so long and for so many years wanted to help my biological father, wanted to get him clean and off drugs. And gosh, it was so much of a process that I became codependent upon that. And oddly enough, that desire to want to help others is still within me. Yet
yeah.
I've channeled that energy, and I use it in a positive way. So, you know, it's a good thing now.
Yes.
Thing now.
Well, unfortunately, we are down to less than, the lady told me it was 50 seconds. So give our callers your email, your website and email address, and we are going to, the listeners will be cut off. So I'm going to say to the listeners, your lines will be cut off, but this recording will continue, and you can come back and listen to the very end of this on our archive line. Please leave us your notes and comments about this call. You can go to our website, www.forachildsheart.org, to look at the interview. If you're interested in purchasing a copy of the DVD, send us a note at visions@forachildsheart.org. And Mr. Alfonso, please give the listeners your website and your email address.
AlfonzoTucker.com, AlfonzoTucker.com. And my email address is 1511tucker@prodigy.com. And Prodigy is spelled Prodigy.
Yes. And we will also post that on our Facebook page. And you can go to For a Child's Heart, Inc., and sign up to be a fan of us on Facebook. And you also have a Facebook page, Alfonso Tucker.
Yes, of course.
Yes, yes, you laugh.
Who doesn't in this day and age, you know? Yeah.
So to everything, we just want to thank you for being on the call. Again, I said please leave us your comment either on Blog Talk, Facebook, email, and let us know what other questions you would like to have heard, because we will have Mr. Alfonso back. So thank you again. Good night.
Hey, Evelyn, my apologies
mm-hmm.
in regards to the schedule thing.
Hold on just a minute.
Not being able to,
hold on.
Right.
Hold on.